Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne. I've got my smallest apron on.
It's so small.
I know. It's like 3 microns across.
I was going to say.
Very small.
I'm just sitting near you, and I don't even see it.
I mostly swear that it's real.
Well, we promise not to spill anything on you while you're here.
Unless it's 2 microns or less.
Well, what I wonder is what you've been cooking.
Let's see. Well, you know, I was kind of in a winter mood, even though it was getting to be spring. So last time we were on the air. And so I did make a meatloaf.
All right.
Woohoo. Dropped it on the floor.
What?
I know.
5 second rule, did you?
Yes.
Yeah,
poor
good.
Dale. But I mean, he saw it, you know, going through the air, and then I thought it was so funny. There was an episode from The Simpsons that I remember, and like where Bart is in the Boy Scouts. It's new, and it's because they're teaching him about knives and traps and stuff like that. And so Bart comes home, or Homer comes home from work, and there's a piece of fly. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. Piece of pie on the floor in the garage. And he goes, floor pie. And he goes to grab it. And then Bart has some snare and whips him up. And so it hit the floor. And Dale just goes, floor meatloaf. And I thought that was so
it's
cute.
It's a delicacy.
But anyway, it was meatloaf. And so, you know, it lasts more than one night. And
yes.
So same thing, second night, floor meatloaf. But I when I make meatloaf, I make my meat and vegetable and spice mixture, and I put it in loaf pan so that it has that form. And then I take the loaf pan and I put just a strip of parchment paper that's not very wide, because I like it even a little less wide than the meat itself. And then I flip it upside down onto a cooling rack, and I put that in a sheet pan. So, because I've found that if I don't have that little strip of parchment, it sticks pretty bad even though I grease the cooling rack. But then I can get it off of there. But then what happens is the paper gets pretty soggy as it cooks and cooks and cooks. But I like that method because the whole meatloaf is exposed to air and it all gets crispy. I don't like that slimy thing when it cooks in a loaf pan itself, that weird slimy meat thing that happens.
Uh-huh.
So, but then you can't just lift that piece of parchment and lift the meatloaf off. So I just put it on my flimsiest spatula. I don't know why. And I got it up off the...
Because you were making floor meatloaf.
Apparently. Off the rack, and then... There it went onto the floor. It was in like 3 pieces, which I called Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But I had the meatloaf, and I make it often. So it's just, you know, how you make meatloaf. You have, you know, egg and a little milk and some breadcrumbs, and you mix that together and you put spices and I always cook my vegetables, like, pretty seriously, carrots and celery, onions and red peppers, and I cook them in a skillet for, you know, really like at least 20 minutes till you're just about, wow, those onions are burning, and then but cool that off and mix that all together. And then when we ate the floor meatloaf, besides, there was like the addition of a little grit, but it tasted very time forward.
Oh.
And what happened was I forgot to add garlic. And so it turned out that the garlic balanced everything so much that the omission of it really changed it. Of course, it would change it.
Yeah.
But it was such a head scratcher. You know, I make this all the time. Why does it taste so different? So, yeah, I forgot the garlic, and then it was time meatloaf.
Okay. And we're talking about T-H-Y-M-E.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not because like, time forward makes it sound like you were, you know.
Back to the future meatloaf.
Back to the future floor meatloaf. It's getting to have way too many adjectives. That's interesting. I think that my meatloaf is essentially the same as yours, although I don't put it in a pan. I just shape it on a sheet pan.
Yeah.
And cook it that way. And I do saute veg, a lot of veg, but I don't put any eggs or anything in it, or bread or anything in it.
I like the eggs for a binder just to keep it from crumbling. And I like putting it in a loaf pan. There's no difference as far as cooking, whether you just shape it. But I like putting it in a loaf pan because then when we make meatloaf sandwiches, it's bread shaped. So it just is easier for me because I like to take the slab of meatloaf and fry it in a frying pan so it's really crispy on the two facing sides, not just the outside edges. So
I haven't made meatloaf sandwiches for a very long time.
It's such an old-timey thing, like Salisbury steak, you know, meatloaf sandwiches.
Both of those things. I love making both of those things anyway. And I think I have, every time I make a meatloaf, I put half of it in the freezer because there's only...
Well, and I like gravy with meatloaf, and so you can make gravy, but I have found that any kind of gravy is just fine with meatloaf. It doesn't matter if it's chicken or beef or turkey. And so whenever I make gravy, I always try to make as much as I can, and then I put it in the freezer. So usually with meatloaf, I'm just throwing some, you know, random gravy out, and it's just fine.
And
you know?
It's just fine, yeah, of course.
And then that's less work.
You really needed mashed potato then.
Yeah, more time for cleaning the floor.
And you need that.
Oh, I know. And the dogs were just like, you know, woohoo! And so there's just one arm for cleaning and picking up and the other arm for fending off the horde.
I tried a recipe that I really, really, really did not like.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's always so disappointing.
Well, I mean, I'm not heartbroken about it, but I am just... I discovered something that I didn't know before about what I don't like.
Okay.
And the recipe was for sweet and sour cauliflower. And it had a lot of, I got it on the internet. It had a lot of comments of people who just love it. It might have even been a 5-star. I can't remember.
Well, and you'd think that it'd be good because it rhymes, sweet and sour cauliflower. You'd think it has that going for it.
You know? Yeah. So that's a good measure.
Thank you.
Welcome. Anyway, I really didn't like it. And while I was doing the dishes, I apologized to the cauliflower for having done that to it.
Because subjecting it.
What I discovered was the sweet and sour sauce had ketchup in it. And it's so sweet and not. I love sweet and sour, and I have a couple of recipes that I really like that I garnered when we lived in Hawaii, and they are not so sweet. Mm-hmm. They have brown sugar in them, but they, you know, have soy sauce and a lot more vinegar and some pineapple juice. And I mean, you know, they're good, and they don't look alarming. Red, sweet and sour looks alarming to me, like candy apples. But it was just really so sweet. I just thought, you know, I felt bad because I really couldn't even eat it. It was icky.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll never do it again. Yeah. But I will say to folks out there that there is a 5-star recipe for sweet and sour cauliflower. And if you like sweet and sour sauce made with ketchup, which I know happens not infrequently in Chinese restaurants, then you might want to try it.
But yeah, I don't like that
I'm going
sauce
back to the regular cauliflower, which I just love cauliflower with salt and pepper and butter. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I make au gratin. But I don't need to be insulting it like that anymore.
Yeah. That restaurant that was down in Manzanita that I just loved that closed years ago, Blackbird, I just loved it. And they had a cauliflower that they would roast with zhug, Z-H-U-G.
Yeah.
And then they just mixed harissa spice with mayonnaise, and that was the dip, and that was delicious.
I bet. That sounds fabulous. I miss them, too.
Well, with the stock market taking such a route, maybe we should talk about beans and potatoes.
Should we talk about beans and potatoes?
Actually, the thing that made me think of that is talking about the mayonnaise with the harissa spice. Anytime you want to make any kind of dip, if you're like, ooh, I wish I had a, you know, coriander dip or something, I guess you probably wouldn't wish that. But just mix it with mayonnaise and you've got a dip. But beans are the same thing, you know. Like, I really like bruschetta. And you can just make any kind of a bruschetta if you just take some beans, put them in your food processor, put a little bit of olive oil in there, and then just whatever spice you are feeling like. They're such a blank palette, you know?
Yeah, yeah, we're talking about white beans.
Yes, yes, those are the ones that I really like. But you could do it with anything that you wanted to, really.
That's right.
You really could. And I remember there used to be a black bean hummus that I loved that was discontinued in the stores years ago. But, you know, same thing. Black beans are delicious. You can do anything with anything that you want. And then just put a little, I mean, you can put a little cheese on a bruschetta, like mascarpone. If you heat that up, it's just delicious. It's, you can just do anything that you want. Put some tomatoes on it. Num.
Yeah, no kidding. That sounds like dinner to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I really, really... Like, I really like the movie Mermaids, where Cher only cooks things on sticks or as appetizers. That's,
I didn't know
only,
that.
She only serves her kid. Everything's on a stick. And I'm like, that's my kind of meal.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I love curry, like curry chicken skewers with, what do you call them? With a peanut sauce, a spicy peanut sauce. Uh-huh. I love that.
Yeah. So yummy. Are we hungry? I don't know.
It's too early. No, it's not. Hey, I wanted to ask you, when you cook eggplant, there's so much on the internet about how you need to remove the skins from eggplants because they're bitter. Do you think they are?
I don't think they are, but I don't cook a lot of eggplant because I'm always cooking for my husband and he's not a big fan of eggplant.
Oh,
however,
okay.
I love eggplant.
I do too, and I like it better with the skin than without it.
Yeah.
And I am not a bitter happy, I mean, I'm not a bitter person, but I'm not a bitter person.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like, for instance, like bitter melon. Man, if I accidentally get a piece of that, I am just like, my whole palate has changed for like 6 months. I can't eat a cucumber. It's too close, you know, because... That thing's so bitter, I just hate it. But I love the skin of eggplants. I think it's delicious.
Don't you think it must be how you cook them? Because it's very different to stir fry an eggplant with the skin on as opposed to roasting eggplant with the skin on.
I don't know. I just do it all. I just love it.
I know. I do too. I'm not interested in peeling an eggplant.
What people's problem is with eggplant skin.
You know... In the old days when River People Farmers Market used to exist here in Astoria, and we would have tents for local organizations to come do something. And one time the OSU folks were there and they had a test to demonstrate how our taste buds work differently.
Oh, really?
To explain why some people like some things and some people don't like some things. And the test was little strips of paper that had been imbued with certain kinds of flavors. And one of them was bitter. One of them was sweet. And so it was really interesting if you, you know, like put this little piece of paper in your mouth and tasted it. Did you like it? Did you not like it? And it told you something about how the chemistry in your system works. And it explains also how some people like bitter things, some people don't like bitter things.
Well, and it's true. There's that genetic thing of what you can taste and what you can't. And maybe that's it. Maybe I just don't have a gene for hating, you know, eggplant skin. I mean, really, seriously, it could just be that.
It could, although I really like bitter melon.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh.
I haven't had it very much at all. In fact, I can't even remember for years, but we lived in Hawaii for a long time and it's very common there and I really liked it.
Okay. It is the number one thing I don't like. It's my number one most hated food. I would rather eat a pickled pig's feet. Then I would.
Oh, I like those too.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm trying.
Well, what don't you like? What don't you like?
That's what I'm trying to think. As you're saying, it's your number one least favorite food. And then I'm thinking, what is mine? I'll get back to you on it.
Okay.
I have
is
no
there
idea.
Anything that you taste and you're like, ugh?
Well, that sweet and sour sauce.
Oh, yeah.
But I like all the ingredients individually. I just didn't like that recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
And also a very insulting thing to do to cauliflower, really. I want to take a quick sec and remind our fabulous listeners that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN Community Radio and North Coast food web. And as always, I will urge you sincerely to visit both of those websites. You'll be glad you did. KMUN.org and NorthCoastFoodWeb.org.
I remember, you know, that restaurant downtown Next. It used to be the Baked Alaska People.
Yes.
I remember once they had an Arab guy come, and he was speaking. I really don't remember the details, but there was a question and answer period, and I got to ask him what in, you know, Arab lands, what do they have for breakfast? And he just said beans, which didn't tell me a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he was a cook, so he couldn't, like, he just knew it was beans, you know, he didn't like
know a recipe or anything.
Yeah, yeah, or, you know, say anything further. And I always wondered what it was that they eat for breakfast, because there's a woman on Instagram, her name is Abir E. Sag, and she's a cook, a young cook, but she does a really good job. But it's just so interesting to see, like you and I, we both watch those Asian videos, and that's just so lush and beautiful. All the things that they cook are just so gorgeous. But this is just so different. It's just, I just don't know a thing about Arab food, you know, and it's just so different. They have a culture or like a thing that they do commonly, which is they make things in big round pots, but the pots aren't super deep. Just like, not giant sauciers, but just like stock pots that are very short, but they have quite a large diameter. I would guess like maybe 14 inches. I mean, really big. And then they stack food in it, stack it almost to the top. And then they cook. And then what the women have to do is put a giant platter over it and then flip it upside down.
Oh, wow.
But it always looks like maybe it's 170 pounds. I mean, seriously, it just looks so heavy. And the platters, because there's juices, they have to be much wider than the pan.
Yes.
And so they can't really get a hold of the handles really well, but it's like a point of pride that they can flip this up, and then they flip it up next to their ear on their shoulder,
and then it's
upside down, and they put it on the table. And the whole thing is so dangerous because it's so hot, you know. Oh, it's just really something to see.
Can you imagine learning how to do that?
No. Or, I mean, they must go to special gyms. food flipping gym.
What is in the food? What is the food?
Well, that's it. Everything. Even I don't recognize some of the fruits or some of the vegetables. The meat, it's pieces. I don't know. Is that goat leg? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But most often in those pots that they flip, it's something that looks like a daisy pattern or a sunflower pattern of like stuffed grape leaf things, you know?
Yeah.
They're rolled not like I'm used to, you know, fat, but very long and thin like cigars. And then they're just all around in a circle.
It's just delicious.
It looks beautiful and delicious, but just the danger. I mean, really, in America, we really only have like grilling that's dangerous, and that's why the men always do it, because it has that whole, that's my theory, is that whole danger element. And no, you don't need to write letters. I didn't mean to be sexist. But
I don't know that grilling is more dangerous than cooking on the stovetop.
I know.
You know, you can injure yourself no matter how you... cooking is fraught with danger.
Yeah. Well, and then me, I've got one of those glass cooking tops, and how I check to see if it's on is I always put my hand on it.
Oh, my God.
I know, just dough. I mean, really, I'm incapable of learning at this stage in my life. Just dough.
We're too busy. We're too busy to develop a new skill. Come
yelling at the ketchup for being in the sweet and sour sauce. Yeah, stupid ketchup.
Cauliflower, I am so sorry. I'll never do that again. Oh.
Do you have any plans to cook anything? Have you seen anything that you are wanting to do in the future?
You know, I haven't seen anything I'm sort of sworn off of trying something new for a couple nights now.
Speaking of my hands, you got burned.
Yeah, really. So I don't really have a plan, no, but I have been reorganizing my pantry.
Oh, that's ambitious.
It was fun. And also, it is tax time, and I do things like reorganize my pantry.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, speaking of potatoes and beans.
Yes, right. So a couple interesting things about that. One was that I had this big glass canister thing with a screw on top that had wheat berries in it.
Oh, nice.
And it was about down to about half full, and I wanted to put it in a smaller container so it wasn't taking up such a big footprint. And so I opened it up and dumped it, started dumping it into another thing, and creatures flew out.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry, but that's so alarming when that happens.
And you just gotta wonder, because it's something that you have used, and it had a screw on lid.
I mean
how they've been in there for a long time waiting for me to open it.
Yeah.
And now I'm there. And now I have free range moths in the kitchen. I mean, there's
nothing you can do.
No.
I'm so sorry.
I just have to deal with them one at a time as we run across each other. But I mean, you're just like, okay, well, you know what? That's going.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I dumped it, but it was just, oh, geez.
I had something get into some chili powder once.
Really?
And you would think, of all the things that I have that you could choose to eat,
yeah.
I mean, but I think it came with the chili powder because it like ate its way out of the bag. But isn't that strange? Chili
yes.
powder.
It's of all not, the things you could
yeah,
choose.
I know. You would not think that that's something that would be affected by critters. You'd think that they would eschew the chili powder.
But no, it was delicious.
Well, that actually reminds me, speaking of critters.
Yes.
What a great show. So fun. You're learning so much, so many things to make. So I heard that there's some kind of an invasive fly. So if there's an invasive fly, you and I are not going to notice it. But it's in all 50 states. But the thing is that it lays its larva in berries.
Oh.
And so that it's that like pretty much starting this year, it's a big deal if you get berries just to soak them a tiny bit, you know, wash them, but not just rinse them. Put them in some water with lemon juice in it.
Okay.
And I guess the larvae are big enough you can see when they come out, so you'll know if it's something that has affected a field that you're picking berries in, you know. But it's
okay.
But I guess there's enough of them that it's a pretty pervasive thing. They said all 50 states.
Ah, oh, geez.
So.
That's so alarming.
Alarming. I don't want larvas with my berries, so
no,
I'm going to do it.
Oh, and I eat a lot of berries all year round.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Now I have to be vigilant. That is so disturbing.
Well, and then, of course, you could freeze them, but then, of course, you're eating dead larva. Mmm, so much better than live larva.
Crunchy.
Yeah.
If you like crunchy snacks, that's for you. You know, I've also been I've been having attacks of obsessive compulsive behavior because of avoiding tax time. Anyway, I mean, I could be totaling columns of numbers, but no, I'd rather put labels on my spice bottles. And so, I got some actual labels because I have all my spice bottles on a tray on the counter because I want to grab them. I don't want to look in a drawer. I don't want to open a cabinet. I want what I want.
Yeah.
So,
well,
but
I think when they are visually easy, you know, they're right there, that you use them more too.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think so too. But they were in bottles. Some of the bottles had long labels on the front. Some of them had handwritten labels on the top. Some of them didn't have any labels. I just knew, sorta. And so I decided to get organized. And I bought some labels that are pre-printed, and they also came with a sheet of blank ones and a special pen so that I could do things that they didn't list, but they listed like 180 different kinds. They listed stuff I never even heard of.
Okay.
But now I have all of these spices, and in the process, I cleaned the outsides of all the glass bottles and put them on the tray with all their new labels. And I'm telling you, it's inspirational.
Oh, that's so cool.
Makes me want to cook something.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. That'll last a couple of weeks. But still. And also, it took an entire parts of 2 or 3 days to get around to finishing it.
Tax-free.
Yay.
taxes-free.
I finally had to break down and make an appointment with the tax lady. Because if I don't have a deadline, I will continue to reorganize. Next is my linen closet. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I keep my spices on my refrigerator. I have magnetic
those are cool.
Circular little containers that have a top with a like plastic see-through.
So you can see, you don't need a label.
No, I put a label across that. Okay. And then I have them alphabetized on the side of the fridge. So there's like maybe 100, 120, and they're just all there, and I can see them and grab them. And
that's a great way, and they don't take up any counter or cabinet space.
Right, because that is very limited. And so that works really well for me. I've done that for a couple decades now. And there's the top screws, so there's a little thing with a big slot so you can pour the spices out, or there's a little shaker so that you can shake it out. So
I always pull the shakers off the bottles and throw them away because I just want to pour a little in my hand, and then if I'll use the pinch or whatever I need, and then I'll dump the rest back in. I don't know why. I'm impatient. And also, I don't trust myself to sprinkle the right amount. It's either an amount that I feel I need to measure, stick a spoon in there, or I just want a pinch.
That's so true, because if I'm shaking something into a recipe, I have no feel for how much that is.
Yeah.
Is that a quarter teaspoon? Is that a tablespoon? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I just shook the bottle a bunch of times. I mean, I have no feel for how much it is if I'm shaking, but I do if it's in the palm of my hand.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a really good idea of how much is there.
Yeah,
that's totally true.
Yep. So I don't trust those shaker things. they deceive me.
We're so suspicious here on Food Talk.
We're willing to throw the entree on the floor, but we're not willing to shake our spice.
Oh, poor meatloaf.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Floor meatloaf.
Oh. Oh.
So I haven't really been doing any cooking that's any different, you know, because it's okay to be outside now, you know, part of every day. I have been grilling a lot, not because it's dangerous, but I just love to grill. And then I had a salad recently that was delicious. I think of roasting vegetables and putting them in salad as a winter thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
But this was a delightful spring salad, mostly of arugula and vegetables. But they had roasted cabbage.
Ooh.
And put it in there too. And that was a delicious, delicious addition. And it didn't make it wintry. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like if I roast up sweet potatoes, you know, cube up some sweet potatoes and roast them up so they've got the little dark crunchy crinklies on the edge, and I put them in a salad, and then especially if you add some nuts to me that feels like a winter salad. But no, it was still really light and refreshing, and it was just an added texture and an added flavor, and it was really, really good.
What was the dressing?
It was just a lemon, just a
like
vinaigrette.
A citrate.
Yeah, lemon, pepper, salt, and olive oil, good olive oil. It was really good. And that's part of what made it refreshing.
I think that, I mean, we're going into hyper salad season.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I am very excited.
Do you use arugula a lot?
No, not a lot. It's not one of Tom's favorites. He likes spinach and he likes lettuce, but he doesn't care too much for, not so much for arugula and not so much for all of the chicories.
Okay.
Which I love the chicories.
Okay. I really like arugula. And I put it on so many things. I mean, not breakfast cereal, but, but you know, we put it on top of...
Well, wait a minute. Have you tried?
I know. But, you know, salads, of course, are mostly that. And then we put it on pizza, of course. But if we have a pasta, so often it'll go on top, and it's just really, really good.
It's yummy. Yeah. It is so yummy. I like it just as a salad, its own self, with a little oil and vinegar.
Yep, mixed in with a hot vegetable.
You know we're out of time, don't you?
No, again. Why?
I don't know.
Doesn't time it ever
passes.
Stop?
No. Good question. Do you want to sing us out?
Okay. I'm driving my vegetables. I'm driving my green edibles. I'm driving my vegetables around. I am driving my broccoli. I'm driving my sweet and sour cauliflower to the dump. Driving my bushel of corn home.
Ay, ay, ay. Linda Perkins, thank you so much.
Yes, keep your meatloafs on the plate and the sweet and sour off your cauliflower. Have a very good week.